Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is my friend Jake Lee. Welcome, Jake.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Jake is 27. He's a BYU law student in his second year of a third-year program. He's married. He's been married about 2 years. I remember seeing the pictures of your wedding on Facebook. You and your bride look great.
People gave me a hard time because I was really interested in politics, and it was on Constitution Day, and they thought that I had planned it, but it was just happenstance.
I love that, Jake.
Yeah.
Jake and I got to know each other because our parents lived together about 20 years ago. My wife and I lived in the Sandy area, and I was young then. Another young couple moved in, and we had kids at the same age, and you're the same age as some of my kids. And I remember you was just this little kid, and then I lost track of you until you showed up on my Twitter feed a few years ago, and I thought, this is a really thoughtful guy. So I just wanted Jake to be on the podcast to share insights into about four subjects, one being political, one being LGBTQ, one being our emotional health, and one being testimony of our restored church. So that's the order of the podcast for our listeners. Let's just start with politics. You come from a political family. You've been involved in politics a little bit. I know you were the college director for a major Republican candidate here in Utah during an election. You've also served as Governor Herbert's digital media director for a period of time. And so you're in this political world. But as I look at some of your social media, I don't get an us versus them feeling from you. I get this feeling that you can stand for your political beliefs but create space for others. So just talk about that, Jake.
Gosh, I think this has kind of been a long going process for me trying to figure out what I believe in the political kind of arena. And I think for a long time I was very kind of a cliche, hardcore conservative. Mm-hmm. And believed that anybody on the left were too touchy-feely and kind of lacked intellectual ability. And I think over time I've kind of learned to question myself, and I think a big part of it is just question the groupthink of it. And a lot of people call it tribalism, but basically the way I see it, we kind of, because of the winner take all structure in the United States, we have two parties, and it tends to kind of separate us into two groups. And in that own group, we kind of sit in what people call an echo chamber, and we hear what we want to hear. And we hear things that not just our own party is saying, but we're presented with kind of the low-hanging intellectual fruit of the other side, where we can kind of punt it away and say, we're so much smarter than that. But the more I thought about it, I just think that even though we have this two-party structure, we have this left wing and this right wing, it doesn't mean every single person fits in it. In fact, I don't think that really anybody is perfectly in line with their own party if they really kind of ask themselves. I think it's by nature, it's helpful to be in a party, but I don't think that it's useful to just assume that everything that you are talking about and believing and what's going on in your own echo chamber is exactly what you believe. We're so individual and unique, and we all have different beliefs. And I just think that a lot of people could really help our country if they just understood that they might be wrong. And that's a really hard thing to do. And you never see politicians do it. There are a few people that might do it that are, you know, in this state. But it's a really hard thing to do, to humble yourself to the point where you might be wrong and the other side or somebody else might be right. And I think it's just an honest thing to do, to take that perspective of it.
you were a political science major at BYU for your undergraduate. Mm-hmm. Did this sort of feeling of wanting to understand the other side or wondering if you're on echo chamber happen then for you as part of that education, or did it happen later as you were involved in these campaigns?
I had like two really fresh, like really liberal freshman roommates, and I think at that point, and even early on when I came back from my mission and I was a sophomore, there were a lot of kind of left-wing people or students in the political science major as well. And I felt kind of defensive,
right,
and that I had to defend what I believed. And I think that prevented me from seeing what I've kind of just explained and having some kind of intellectual humility. I think it took me a while. I think maybe in the last couple of years, it's been kind of this eye-opening experience. Just I'm having kind of like a healthy questioning of a lot of things, and I don't think that questioning, you know, your political beliefs means that you're going to jump to the other side. I think people tend to do that too. I think it kind of boomerangs people where you see something wrong with what's going on in your own party or your own group and you just kind of run the other way. I think it's just, I think it's like a healthy questioning in the last couple of years of just, well, maybe I can see what they're thinking. Maybe I can understand that the other side has some good things to bring to the table.
Does it cause you to have less fear of the other side? And I'm thinking of a scripture, perfect love casts without fear. And if there's any, even though you haven't changed sides, do you just sort of feel less fear of the other side? But maybe you do feel the same sort of concerns politically from the other side, even though you're understanding better their voice.
I think, I don't know, I think I have less fear it for sure about the motives. I think that's a very initial thing that you have to do, is understand that just because there are people contrary to what you believe doesn't mean they have kind of bad motives in what they're trying to do. I think the reality is most people are just trying to help, including people on the left and on the right, and I think that's not said enough. I think that...
That's very thoughtful. What would be an example of somebody that's on different sides, but at the end of the day actually has the same motives? Is there examples that come to mind?
I think a lot of people in Utah, kind of their ears perked up a little bit when they heard somebody that I got to meet, Spencer Cox. And this is relevant to a lot of wonderful people that come on your podcast. It was after a really bad event, and Spencer Cox is the lieutenant governor of Utah. He's Republican. And he came out after, I think it was
the Orlando.
Yeah. And I think that he showed a very universal motive of trying to love people and, you know, love people that might not have been his voter base at the time. And yeah, I mean, that's something that stands out to me. I think that kind of shocked people a little bit. Oh, you know, a Republican candidate is kind of standing up for the LGBT community. And I think that those kind of shocking things help, but yeah.
And I love that example. And when you go back to the motives, I think that candlelight vigil had the motive to heal people.
Yeah.
People were hurting across both political parties, but to have Lieutenant Governor Cox come, I don't know if he was Lieutenant Governor at the time, but that's the first time I became aware of him, was at that mm-hmm. vigil. And some of the things he said at that vigil I thought were so authentic, because he said, I don't even quite know what all these letters mean.
Yeah.
Which was sort of the honesty of the situation, but he was able to speak from a position of credibility because he just wanted to heal people.
Right.
And he wanted to take away pain and not. And so I thought it was really thoughtful, and he didn't compromise anything in his political beliefs or his religious beliefs, in my opinion, by doing that.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts that come to mind? I want to go back to tribalism. For any of our listeners that aren't familiar with that term, Jake, how would you define tribalism?
I think that it's kind of similar to, I guess, what I characterize as a groupthink, but the way I see it, and maybe I'm a little bit off, but the way I see tribalism is that it's a bad thing, and what it is you get caught up with the people that are around you and with your group, that it almost, the real right and wrong and good and bad are ignored because it's so important that your tribe wins. And that's kind of when we see our communities and our nation, for that matter, kind of decline, is when the facts and the important things and things like, you know, healing people get tossed to the wayside, and most of kind of the tribal idea is that those are kind of besides the point, and the point is to win at all costs. And I mean, my counter argument to that is just, why is that the most important thing? We will get nowhere if that is our most important thing, because no one really benefits. Winning is just kind of this idea that we've constructed socially. And
interesting. Yeah. Very thoughtful. If one of our listeners is worried they're in an echo chamber and not, and they're kind of, their intellectual curiosity is enough, they're wondering, am I in an echo chamber? What advice would you give them to sort of self-analyze themselves to see if that, and what they could do different? Anything's come to mind?
First, we all have people right now that believe something different than us. And you can gauge this whether you're, you know, at a point where you can kind of engage them. But that's the first thing that I would say is go towards somebody that disagrees with you, and don't try, you know, your first priority in that kind of discussion is not, let me explain to you why I'm right. It is just to listen and to understand kind of how they think and why they think that way, and what motivates them. And I think a lot of people will find that, like I kind of said earlier, a lot of people have very good motives, and they're, you know, that they hope that the best comes out of what they're believing at the time. And I think a similar thought is something that I've encouraged people to do, just, I mean, on Twitter, for example, but this happens all over, is to kind of have a similar outlook, but maybe follow some people that you don't agree with. You know, you're a Republican.
It's a great suggestion.
Yeah. Follow Democrats if you're Republican, or vice versa, or follow some people that disagree with you. If, you know, I mean, to be honest, in the last year, I think I followed a bunch of people in the LGBT community through kind of that follow you.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I disagree with it. I actually am, you know, kind of a hopefully adopted ally.
Cool.
But it's been a growing process, and it's been really great for me to just have those voices on my timeline.
Yeah, Twitter is, I'm obviously old for Twitter. It's my sons that got me into it. But it has been that for me. And I don't have a lot of people around me, perhaps out of my echo chamber. And so it's certainly been helpful for me. I love that suggestion. That's a great suggestion, Jake. At the beginning of the podcast, I was going to tell everybody your Twitter handles. Not that you came on the podcast to get more followers, but, you know, Jacob Rex Lee. So at Jacob Rex Lee is where our guest is on Twitter. You should all follow him, and I think we create more understanding and community. Let's shift. We kind of talked about LGBTQ. This summer, I noticed on your Twitter feed, kind of practicing the principle of empathy. You had some friends open up to you that they were gay. Just talk to us about that road for you.
I think, I mean, coming from my background, I don't have any immediate or extended family members that are LGBTQ, and it is it's completely foreign to me. I mean, it really is.
Where did you serve your mission for our listeners?
Everett, Washington. It was Spanish speaking, so it's right above Seattle.
So any investigators that you're taught that were LGBTQ, any of this come up on your mission?
I had one, and we barely saw him, so it was kind of in passing, not really.
So it didn't get on your radar map until, okay, good.
Not at all, and I think
thanks for serving a mission. That's awesome.
Well, you're welcome. I honestly gained a lot more than I feel like I gave, so it was my pleasure.
Did anybody on your pushpin board when you were guessing say Everett Washington Spanish speaking?
No, but every person in the Lee family, since my grandpa Lee kind of opened up some missions in Mexico, every at least boy with the last name Lee has served a Spanish speaking mission. So it was my dad and my uncle both served, and then my uncle has two boys that both serve Spanish.
That's
and then
awesome.
Three in my family that serve Spanish.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where your sons or daughters go.
Yeah.
Jake,
sorry, remind me of the question.
In fact, I'm going to read a tweet that you sent out in June. I'm going to read two of them, and then you can kind of talk about the backstory.
Sure.
And I realize this is part of thread. It looks like I'm catching a tweet beyond the original tweet. Then in the last couple of days, I was separately approached by two friends of mine. In each instance, they were told me they were gay and how hard life has been for them. Recently, I kept getting strong promptings to try to put myself in the shoes of someone that is LGBTQ and learn some empathy. It was random. I didn't know why. I just went with it. I began imagining what life would be like, what parts would be difficult. I just love those tweets. So tell us more.
It was really surreal. Just the beginning of the summer. I think even before. And honestly, maybe it had a little bit to do with some small things that you have been said. I've been following you for longer than this, and I think you might have had a hand in helping me kind of lead my thoughts this way. My mind kind of thinks in a weird, deep, scattered way, and
cool.
I think that this kind of came up to my mind. I don't know. It just is such a hard and difficult thing. I've seen people in this wonderful community, I've seen them treated very poorly, and from my own circles, and I don't know, who knows, maybe I have said something in the past that has hurt someone, and
same,
and it's the reality is it's very different, and I think people have a hard time understanding it, and I think that I had a hard time understanding it, and I just wonder if Heavenly Father said, I think it's time for Jake to understand what's going on. And you know, I'm not the most amazing or capable person of just tapping into empathy. I have my own faults, but I think I had a couple experiences before I had been kind of, my two friends came out to me, and I don't know, I had just spent some time already thinking about how hard it would be and how maybe rejected and you know, not feeling loved. Kind of all of that stuff surrounding it, I got to a point where, I don't know, I think that I was able to at least help these two friends in a very small way just by saying, you know, you guys are great and you're brave and you're, you know, this you coming out to me doesn't change anything. If in reality, it might even just make me feel like you guys are, you know, some of my heroes, because I think that that's it's a really, really brave and hard thing to deal with. And yeah.
What about you made them come out to you? In other words, I assume they sense you had enough, and maybe you don't want to say I'm kind and empathetic, but it's an honor, it's a credit to you that these guys felt safe enough to open up with you. Any thoughts for our listeners that sort of, I want to be that man or woman that's safe enough that if there's somebody needs to come out, they'll come out to me and I can help them, or at least listen to them.
I do kind of see quite a few people kind of becoming more vulnerable. And I think it's our society's moving that way a little bit, but maybe some in the other direction. I just know that growing up, the more I've thought about it, my dad has kind of showed vulnerable sides to him.
Cool.
And I think that really helps people when they see a leader in their life showing vulnerability. And I think that that helped me understand that I could be vulnerable. And then in turn, I think that my friends knew, because I had, you know, opened myself up to them before and said, I struggle with this and that, they knew that I was real enough to understand that they were really going through that and I wouldn't judge them.
That's, I think, very helpful. Any other thoughts on your friends and what you feel like was the, for someone else who's wanting to have this conversation, do you have any advice on what you could say to somebody coming out that's helpful? I love what you earlier said, but any other thoughts on that, Jake?
I think that it's going to be a journey for every single person in their own way. Journey meaning being kind of coming to a point where they've opened up that part of their heart in order to kind of help people that are dealing with or that are LGBT. And I don't know, I've had a couple discussions with people about this, and I just come to realize that everybody's different, and I have a hard time telling people this is the exact way to become, you know, loving, because I don't really feel like I did it myself. I feel like Heavenly Father kind of said, okay, well, I'm going to help you understand. So I think the best thing is just to maybe listen to some promptings that are surely coming to most people. I think Heavenly Father is careful and really understanding of what's going on with a lot of people struggling. And I think that he knows that there are people that can help. So the promptings will come. I think maybe just staying humble and listening.
I love that. Any more thoughts you'd like to share about LGBTQ? And while you're thinking that, I'm going to share a thought. In talking with lots of gay men and women, it's often the straight people they come out to that is the most helpful and healing. So some of the gay guys, and you guys that are listening that are LGBTQ, message me if this isn't correct, because I don't want to be your spokesperson. But my experience is, a gay woman, it's a little safer than to come out to a straight man, and a gay man coming out to a straight woman, there's less tension there. Potentially, but the most healing sometime are when a gay man can come out to a straight man and it doesn't change the relationship. It doesn't weird them out, so to speak, that this guy actually might be attracted to me, and it just doesn't seem to enter the conversation. You just see them as a fellow human being.
Right.
And I don't know if weirded out's the right word, but it sometimes, for my generation, that would sort of cause someone of my age to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
And your age group seems to say this doesn't change anything.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I just hope that we're all, and this is myself included, I really am not anywhere close to where, you know, I can kind of stand up and say I'm doing everything. But I really hope that people can understand that regardless, just put out of your mind the fact that, leave judgment away. It just doesn't help. It's not important to your salvation. It has nothing to do with kind of what your role is in their life. And most of the time, your role in everyone's life, and especially including those that are struggling with mental illness or just people that, you know, happen to be LGBTQ, your role is to love them and enable them to make correct decisions. And it has nothing to do with whether you think what they're doing is correct or not.
I like that. Why do people need to come out? Any thoughts for our listeners on that? These guys could have never told anybody. And I guess we could have them on the podcast to answer this question. So I'm kind of asking you to answer the question for them. Any thoughts on that, Jake?
I mean, it's hard for me to speak to them, but I can kind of relate it to, I've struggled with depression for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of been just something that I've had to deal with for a long time. And I think that sometimes it's helped me to just express what I'm going through. And it probably has a little bit to do with the fact that I want, you know, people to help me through it. But, but I also just, you know, want to feel validated a little bit that, you know, I'm not an enigma. I'm not crazy or it's not my fault. And I think tons of people, open up and become vulnerable because there are just so many people that come into their lives when that happens and when they say, hey, I'm struggling. And I think that has a lot to speak to human nature and our willingness to help people, I think, if we open up.
And let's kind of shift into your own emotional health. And that's one of the things I saw in your Twitter feed that I thought was so real and authentic. And when you kind of were open with your own emotional health, my respect for you, Jake Lee, just kind of went up because I thought, this guy is real. And this guy has so much strength and courage that he can talk openly about his own emotional health. And I saw it not as a sign of weakness, but a sign of great strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to what you're saying is that then it makes you safe for other people to talk. I love this tweet you sent out. Let's start with this one as we transition to your own emotional health. We never truly know the mental struggles people deal with. I was student body president of Pleasant Grove High and dealt with constant anxiety. And then you personalize it here. Some days I'd walk to class without saying hi to anyone because it was too much to handle. Some would get offended. It hurt to hear. All I wanted to feel was normal. It's just an honest tweet. So kind of share with our listeners a little bit about your own journey in this space.
I think that it took me a long time. I mean, this is hindsight's 2020. I don't think at that time I realized I had or I was dealing with anxiety. But I think for, you know, over a decade now, it seems like I've been dealing with anxiety and depression, and they've just been really hard. I think that, I don't know, I think I'm a little bit spoiled in the way that there have been a lot of things in my life that I've set my mind to and that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I point and I can get there. But it's been hard for me to battle an enemy that, you know, has an outpost in my head and that I can't see, and that there's not, you know...
Can't see. It's interesting.
There's not a specific list of steps that I can take and it will be, you know, alleviated. And that's been hard for me, but I think it's been good for me in my growth. I mean, you caught me in a good part of the week. Later in the week, I'm usually a little bit happier. And I think Monday or Tuesday, I wouldn't be telling you how fun it is to have depression and anxiety. But yeah, I can honestly say I think that Heavenly Father decided that I needed to go through this, and there are, you know, a variety of reasons that why I'm going through it. And yeah.
Why does it give you more empathy for others, even people that don't have anxiety or depression, like our LGBTQ or just other people? Why does that give you more empathy?
I think a common thread in just overall struggle is a feeling of sadness and despair. And I think sometimes it's hard to connect things like that. But for me, it's always been so simple that the things that I have felt, you know, the hardest days that I've gone through in feeling that really just dark feeling of almost, you know, hopelessness. Tons of people are going through similar things and feeling the exact same feeling. And a lot of people are just going through different things and feeling those feelings. I think, you know, I really don't know what kind of made it click for me, but I do remember kind of realizing, I mean, this was like a couple of weeks ago, realizing that, wow, there's this tiny little silver lining to going through depression and it's, you know, an ability to kind of touch someone else's cross in a way that even 2 years ago I had no ability to do. And I don't think I could have done that on my own. I'm not that smart. So I think depression has brought me to a low that I can kind of connect with other people that I am 100% sure that there are people, you know, within a mile of where we're recording this that are feeling the same feeling.
I love that visual imagery of touching somebody else's cross, because, and sometimes I think you're right, when we have are carrying our own crosses, our ability to touch somebody else's cross is increased. Talk about why you felt vulnerable on Twitter to share some of your emotional health and why that's an okay thing to do, because I do the same thing on Twitter. I'm try to be pretty authentic.
I think I feel okay to do it because I don't know. I run some test runs in my family and friends just saying, this is how I'm feeling. And I mean, you might get a few people that are kind of weird about it, but most people just in real life have made me feel like I can open up. And I don't know. I mean, it just opening up just feels so much better. And maybe it's just because all of a sudden you feel like you have a community that's carrying your cross with you. But yeah, I don't know. It's always helped me to open up. And I think maybe I'm just an extrovert. I don't know if everybody, you know, is helped by that, but it really helps me. It makes me feel, I mean, and people reach out and, you know, it just feeling connected with people really helps, feeling understood and validated.
Yeah, I like that. I love this idea of fitting in versus belonging, and fitting in is where we assess a situation and we become what we need to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And that might be a certain type of testimony or a certain level of mental health or a certain level of fitting in, and that can be pretty exhausting. Belonging is where we're able to be who we are and love for who we are. So, and that is less exhausting. That's sort of like, oh, I can just be who I am.
Yeah.
We're not talking about good behavior or bad behavior. It's not like that's an eat, drink, and be merry philosophy, but it just lets us be who we are and be accepted for who we are versus having to fit into some, I don't know, cultural expectation or some societal expectation. Or right. Sometimes our Mormon culture doesn't give us much space to be individuals within that.
I think it's really healthy for society just in general. I'm just, kind of thinking back, I'm taking a mediation class at...
That would be interesting.
Taking it at BYU Law School, and it was like one of the first days where we had this activity kind of thing where we stood across, we were supposed to pick somebody that we didn't know. And I think this kind of, there are a lot of other scenarios where people will do this activity, but it works for mediation too, just to kind of learn some empathy. But you stare right in, you stand right in front of somebody and you just stare at them, you're eye to eye for like a minute, and it's really awkward, and you kind of giggle at the beginning. It's
bad.
You feel weird, but then kind of our professor read some things that some statements saying, I feel real pain and I've had real struggles, and by the end of it, it you know, you loved that person and you barely knew him. And I think this process of kind of being vulnerable and opening up, even on social media, I think helps other people see eye to eye with you. And it's really hard to be rude to somebody when you're just sitting down with them, because you start to learn about them. And I think that this process just helps our society kind of understand and humanize everyone else.
Humanize is really a good thing. And I'm mindful of the suicide issue in our community. And as you talk, I'm thinking of Spencer Cox again, mm-hmm. and that he has publicly talked about his own, I'm not quite sure the right words, but just, you know, as a teenager, being in really dark places in that area.
Right.
And him being open about that, and now this leader in our community, I think that makes him real and approachable and genuine, and I'd like that about him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about, you know, I think I've told our listeners, I've seen a therapist twice in my life. I saw one in my sixth grade year, and I can't even remember why. And I saw one the last year as serving as a YSA bishop. And I think for me during that last year, I think my gas tanks kind of lowered. My therapist said, I think you have compassion fatigue because you just spent so much time listening to people. But it also, to your point, I think it gave me better insight into people, as I felt my emotional health spiraling into places that I've never felt it before. And it was interesting that happened at the same time I was sort of giving everything for the cause. So mm-hmm. I realized that people can have difficult emotional journeys and be in a good spot with God, Christ, and our church. And
right.
And that was sort of obvious to me because I was, you know, I felt like doing good things and helping people, but mm-hmm. my own personal health was sort of, you know, spiraling, and my therapist really helped me. So any more thoughts on just emotional health or tweets or things you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I think that, and I wrote these things down just because...
Good.
I don't think that I am at a point where, you know, I need all of this help, but I do know the feeling of when I've been, you know, really hurting,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like there are some things that I think just everyone can do to help somebody that might be dealing with this, with depression or with anxiety or with really anything. I think just being there and listening is a lot more important than we realize. What we want to do when we want to help somebody is we come and we sit down and we tell them everything that they need to do in order to be better. And it's a really good thought, but it doesn't help that much. And I think just being there and listening, helping them feel loved and helping them feel important, and, you know, sometimes just helping them understand that those feelings that they're having, you know, aren't because of anything that they've done, or, you know, a lot of times they're very normal. A lot of people are dealing with things like that. yeah, I think those things can make a world of a difference.
I love that, because I think somehow we've created a belief sometimes, if our emotional health isn't where it needs to be, that God doesn't love us or we've done something to separate ourselves from God. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
If I could slide a button over to you, Jake, and you could push it to never to have any anxiety or bad days again, would you push it? Or and some guys, I think, would push it if they could still have all the lessons that come with it. Because there's a side of you that probably like not to have this and would like to close this chapter of your life. But there's a side of you that recognizes it's bringing Christ-like attributes in your life. So how do you figure?
I don't know. I mean, I think, like I said, in the later half of the week, I wouldn't push it. At the beginning of the week, normally, I would. And we're all being honest with ourselves.
Good.
There are times in all of our lives where we're wanting to push that button, you know?
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, I don't think of it that as much anymore. It's more just kind of, well, this is
good.
The here and now. This is what's going on in my life. And let's just kind of live in the present, if that makes sense.
It does. It's a great way to probably cope, because I think sometimes the enormity of a lifetime of dealing with this could be overwhelming. And I think I like what you said is, I'm just doing the best I can.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to try to sort of figure out if in your 20s, the next 70 years of my life and where this is going to go, because that could be scary.
Yeah.
But, you know, a thought comes into my mind is this makes you a better father and a husband. You don't have any kids yet, do you?
Not yet. We have one on the way.
You do?
Due in March, yeah.
I didn't pick that up from social media. I better look closer. Congratulations. Is this a boy or a girl?
We will find out in a week.
Wow. But I would think if you sat down 10, 20, 30 years from now and we talked about this issue, you would say, you know, this is hard, but this has made me a better husband and father and leader and priesthood leader and connecting with the priests if I'm a priest quorum advisor. So I would think that there's days you'd want to push the button, but there's days you'll sit down and have a conversation with your, and this is for all our listeners that are working, that just have stuff in their lives. I think there's days where you'll be able to lift and help somebody because of your own cross, that you'll leave that visit and you'll go, you know, I'm really glad I've walked this road because I've just been able to really help somebody.
Yeah.
And there's probably incredible sort of feeling of satisfaction to be able to touch somebody's cross and then lift it.
Right.
And I would assume if we had your two gay friends that talked to you, I would guess they left that encounter with you. I just feel that's really strongly with their cross lifted, that you not only touched it, but because you listened to them.
Yeah.
That you lifted their cross and they just felt better. And they knew you loved them. They didn't have to fit in anymore, but they could belong with their sexual orientation known to you. And you still, you know, they knew you, now they know you still love them, even not like it's a negative thing, but even with this closeted information. I want to close with this last section. As I was, and Jake and I, for our listeners, we started with prayer. We hope that you're feeding the Spirit here. We hope that ideas are coming to your mind that help you or allow you to help others. But I want to just talk about your own testimony and your own feelings about our restored church, Jake. And maybe lead in with this idea that you shared with me before the podcast that sometimes, because of your emotional health, you can't feel the Spirit.
Yeah.
Talk about that concept.
I think that, I mean, I really actually started to I guess, realize that anxiety and depression were kind of affecting that ability to kind of feel the Spirit. It was years ago, kind of, I would go to the temple, and so many people, I mean, that is a place where you just hear so many people talk about how wonderfully uplifting it is. And, you know, there were more times than I can count that I did not feel like that. And it really made me question what I was doing in my life, made me feel like I wasn't being the, you know, best member of the church that I could. I wasn't following the commandments. And I mean, I eventually just realized maybe it's not you, and maybe some things are just really complicated, and the spirit isn't, you know, forever there. I think for everybody, they're not always feeling the spirit, and I think that everybody goes through some parts of their life where, you know, they're not on that spiritual high, and I think sometimes it's hard because it's the lifeblood of your membership of the church. That's what drives you to go to church every week, and to be without that for some time is, it just, it's really hard. It's kind of like carrying a, you know, backpack full of rocks. It you going and doing the actions and in church, that, you know, reading and praying and all of those things kind of makes it disheartening, because you say a prayer or you read some scriptures and you're not, you know, uplifted. And it's scary. It's a weird feeling, because that's not, I guess, the norm, at least what's talked about.
That's really helpful. And that's so honest. And so many of our listeners need to hear that. I read a book about depression once, and it was an active LDS woman, and she just said, the chemicals in my brain that need to be released to be able to fill the spirit aren't there or aren't able to be released. So my ability to fill the spirit is physiologically limited. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that comes to my mind is this equation sometimes we create in our Mormon, not doctrine, but culture, that if we do certain things, we're going to fill the spirit. And so if you go to the temple and you don't hear the spirit, and you hear, go to testimony meeting and 20 people say, I felt the spirit, the testimony,
right,
then you come home from testimony and look in the mirror and go, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And then as we all look in the mirror, we can self-actualize. And I tried to get the YSAs not to do that. And that's a terrible road,
mm-hmm.
because then we forget all the good things we're doing. And we see the things that we've missed, and we go, this is all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I didn't pray on Tuesday morning, or I didn't read, or I didn't follow that impression. And we just, and that then adds to our load and sort of spirals us down. So I think, I love what you've said, and just, yeah, you can go to the temple. A story comes to mind, and I want to send it back to you. My wife and I went to Trek this summer. We were a Trek assignment. And I tweeted once from Trek, because I actually had cell phone service at Martin's Cove. I couldn't believe it. Anyway.
Pioneer to tweet.
we just got up. But we were up in Martin's Cove, and the senior couple, before we went up to Martin's Cove, and I wish I knew their names, because I love what they said. They said to the young people in our stake, they said, some of you will go up there and feel the spirit of Martin's Cove, and it'll be a spiritual experience. But then he said, some of you will go up there and won't feel anything. And for those of you that don't feel anything, you can still, you may feel this experience later, but it's not because you're not faithful. It's not because you haven't done anything wrong. And he gave people permission to not feel the spirit at one of the most spiritual sites in our faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was great, because I'm thinking of the percentage of young men and young women that went up there and wouldn't have felt the spirit and would have then gone to the testimony meeting, where people would have talked about an all-time spiritual experience at the top of Martin's Cove, and they would just sit there and say, you know, I don't know if I belong in this church.
Yeah.
Because I'm not having that experience, and I'm not safe to say I didn't feel anything, because mm-hmm. there's no permission in our culture. So I love what you're saying and what that couple taught, and we just have different spiritual experiences at different times, and they may come at different times, and I'm sure you could share times when you've felt the spirit that kind of surprised you.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't kind of in a traditional experience, and
right.
where you didn't feel it in the temple. So any more thoughts, Jake, back to you on this?
I'm actually a better writer than I'm a speaker. I feel like sometimes I fundle with my words a little bit, but I just wanted to kind of read this part of, I kind of posted something about this a couple weeks ago, and this is, I guess, my answer to what do you do when you're not feeling the Spirit at, you know, a specific time. Sometimes our faith is without feeling. No matter how hard we try, we can't manufacture it. Without it, life becomes cold, the future looks bleak, and our confidence fades. Second-guessing ourselves becomes second nature. Our faith becomes deflated and desperate. With our faith on life support, believing becomes a constant struggle, and acting on that weakened faith is exhausting. In that moment of numbness, it is though there is nothing to fill your heart. You feel empty. No matter what you do, you feel empty. But it is at this very time of crisis that we must choose to go on without feeling. We must choose to fill our faith with what we have left, our desire and our choice to continue. I think that just kind of encapsulates how I at least am grappling with sometimes not feeling the Spirit when I, you know, maybe at some point thought I should be.
I love that, Jake, because I love two things in particular. I love that it validates people that may not have faith at times or feel the Spirit at times, but it also, everything you wrote is full of hope. And that's one of my favorite words in the gospel. It has been for about 10 or 20 years, is everything I think that Christ taught, one of the foundations of our doctrine is hope. And that creates hope. Mm-hmm. What you just wrote, that even though it's not quite, that there's hope in the future. Any thoughts you'd say to some of our listeners that are struggling with their testimony or even wondering if they can stay in our restored church?
I think that especially lately, it's just so easy to get an answer to normal everyday questions. I mean, everybody has Google at their fingertips and can just answer whatever they're, you know, wondering about. But with things like the church and whether or not it's the true church, I think it kind of gets in people's heads and they kind of fumble around with the idea that, you know, well, if this isn't true, then, and then all of a sudden the dots start connecting with them and they think, well, I figured it out. The church isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the scripture that comes to mind is just the scripture where Nephi says, I don't know, you know, I don't know the answer to this. And that's so revealing, I think, of his ability to be vulnerable, but also I think every single person, if they were being completely honest, you don't know everything. And, you know, most of our, you know, the members in our church don't know everything. I think, if you know, Heavenly Father does, but, you know, he's not going to, you know, spoon feed it to us all the time. And that's a real struggle. But I think it should give every single person a peace of mind to know that, you know, even a great prophet like Nephi, and I'm sure even our prophets today don't know every single thing and are struggling with things. And I think kind of like what I wrote down, I think faith has so much more to do with choice and a desire, and that's where it starts for sure. But it does have a lot more to do with faith than I think we make it out to be. And there are a lot of really great things about this church. And the best thing about it is that when you start with the desire and you kind of take a couple steps forward, not knowing what's going to happen or not knowing what to do, normally those steps start to kind of fill you with something good and it kind of snowballs. But yeah, I would just say those two things, just kind of understanding that you don't know everything and that taking just that step, having a little desire, I mean, it'll go a long way.
I love that. Are there sort of core things in the church that are core to your testimony, that are kind of your favorite pillars of our restored doctrine?
Yes, I think, I mean, I love the Book of Mormon, and I think that, I mean, there were days on my mission where I was full of anxiety, and it did sometimes help me feel better about kind of things. Maybe, you know, that was the spirit that was there at that time, but it is just a really hard thing to go up to battle against when you're trying to dismantle the church. And, you know, maybe there are things that might look like flaws, but the reality is when you do read it, whether you're feeling the spirit or not, it does speak truth. And I think it's just such a universal guide to everything that we need to become, and I love it. I think that sometimes, especially during law school, it's really hard because I'm just a lot of times.
Are you behind on your sleep, Jake?
I got good sleep last night, but I won't say other days than that. But yeah, no, I feel like where it's in my life, I'm being a better person.
I love your testimony of the Book of Mormon. I love kind of coming back to a couple of things you said, some the connecting of the dots. I think some people need to have a testimony where they have a fallen domino or two, things they're just not comfortable about that are in our history or something else, but I think they can have a testimony that it hits dominoes that are really deep, that have really deep roots. So like the Book of Mormon or vision about the plan of salvation or the priesthood or temple. Mm-hmm. So I think some people have a testimony that doesn't have any fallen dominoes and there's no missing dots and everything just lines up. But I think, and that's fine. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I think we need to normalize another type of testimony that might have a fallen domino or two. Now, if everybody's trying to pull everybody to their fallen domino, but I think if that's one thing, but I think, and behind that person with a couple fallen dominoes, maybe someone that's deeply still committed to the church, to their temple covenants, to doing what's right, and they may have a different type of testimony, and I think we need to honor both of those. I also am going back to Nephi because I'm remembering sometimes with the YSAs when I served, we would just read Nephi talking about the valley of sorrow, and the hope that this valley he was in, which could represent lots of different things, emotional health, sin, testimony. He was so honest about that. He was so vulnerable, and makes us love Nephi. Yeah. But he always had hope on that other side of the valley. Sometimes with the YSAs, we draw the valley. And then we draw the other side going up, and we'd sort of talk about what we need to do potentially to sort of get through that valley using Nephi. So we're kind of coming to the close. Just any thoughts you want to share about your testimony of the church or any of these other topics or anything you just want to share with our listeners, Jake Lee?
I wholeheartedly believe that this church is true, and it's easy to question it, and sometimes it's hard to say, but when I'm being honest with myself and not charged up with any kind of anger, I do always come back to that. And I think there have been times where another just shake to my testimony is that, well, I'm living the commandments. Why am I not being blessed? And I think that something that's helped my testimony over the last, you know, several years has just been the fact that I've kind of broken that tether and basically said, maybe those blessings are in the life to come.
Cool.
And maybe even blessings are in my life, but I'm calling them trials right now.
That's really cool.
And so I think that that's something that's helped my testimony, but yeah, I do come back to that, and it's hard not to smile. I believe it's true, and I really do.
Thank you for joining us, Jake Lee, on this podcast. And my voice goes with yours. I believe in this church. I deeply believe in it. I'm 57, and I look back at all the good in my life, and it's directly tied to the church and the things it's taught me, the insights it's given me, the life it's given me, my wonderful wife and family, and all the good in my life is tied back to the church. So I join my testimony with you, and I think many of our listeners may be trying to navigate that. So I think this podcast is helpful for them. So thank you, Jake Lee. When I meet people like you in the millennial world, I just have hope for our future, for our church. I don't go to sleep at night worried about the future, because you don't want to be praised, but I just have a great deal of love and respect for your generation. And I think you're able to move to a higher level in some of these things that you've talked about than I was able to do at your age, where you're seeing less tribalism, you're seeing the gospel of Jesus Christ as a way to build bridges of understanding and support. What's obviously consistent with our doctrine, and I think we're maturing to come out of a little bit of a yes for us versus them and still stand for our beliefs and everything, but sort of see the goodness in humanity and sort of see how we can work common ground for higher goals. And I think we can bring more people into our restored church with that framework. So thank you, Jake Lee, for joining us on. We'll sign off on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.